The Weekly Connect
on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect for another week. Thank you for joining us again. And this is a show that is all about you. If you're blind or partially sighted, join the conversation and tell us about your experiences of life with sight loss. That's what we're going to be hearing about this hour. We're going to be meeting makeup vlogger Lucy Edwards this week, whose YouTube channel has nearly 30,000 subscribers. And Dipti Badressa, who blogs on her day-to-day experiences of being blind. I'll be chatting to them about why they blog and what they get out of it. That discussion coming up. Also on today's show, we hear from Sherry and her band in World Connect. From childhood, she always knew music was the thing that made her happy. And don't we all want to be happy in life? Well, Braille music helps her. And ukuleles never sounded so good.
Everything you play on a ukulele is beautiful. You just put your fingers down almost anywhere and it sounds pretty.
Also in today's show, we hear from Claire Shorten. Her sudden sight loss after brain surgery meant she wasn't the only one faced with adapting to her new life.
I not only needed to understand how to be blind, people needed time to understand it too.
And Society of the Week travels to the West Country to hear from Laura, the founder of Moor Vision, and Christina and her daughter Charlie.
It's not, oh, that's Charlie, she's blind. It's, oh, that's just Charlie.
That's all coming up on this week's Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
So thanks to everyone who's been in touch with us over the last week. It really is your programme and your views, so we really do welcome them, and we thank you for getting in touch. The Space Invaders chat certainly connected with lots of you. We'll hear from Dr. Sarah Bryan later on in the show, who had her property snatched in the name of help. I was only just able to hold on to it. Hear from Sarah later. Our last discussion on partial sight and total blindness seemed very topical after the Guardian's article on the same day by Annalisa Dinella, who shared her experience of partial sight. Lisa Lomas commented on the RNIB Facebook page.
My husband is VI, and sometimes he will use a cane, other times not. It depends on the light, where we are, and how busy it is. But some of the looks he gets when, for example, he folds up his cane, then reads a menu in the cafe, I feel like having a shirt made up saying, he's not faking it, I promise.
I could do with one of those. Now, you may have noticed that there's been a bit of a regime change going on. That's right, Obama is out and Trump is coming in. Well, the campaign was controversial. The president-elect is controversial. But what do we know about his policies? And what can the visually impaired and disabled community in the States expect from their new leader? We used an app called Vorail to talk to that community, and Laura Kirker presents their views.
Talking about Northern New Jersey draws the prober's eye, written by a nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said. This is 14 years ago. They didn't do a retraction.
That clip was the source of one of the many controversies that came out of President-elect Donald Trump's campaign. It was accompanied by Trump jerking his arms around and holding his right hand at an angle, apparently mocking journalist Serge Kovalevsky's physical disability. The incident was voted one of his worst offences in a Bloomberg poll in the summer, this being, of course, before the locker room scandal, but the Democrats made huge use of the clip in their campaign. Trump denied he was mocking Kovalevsky, but was it indicative of how America's 45th president will view the disabled community in his country? Should our cousins over the pond be worried about what the future holds for them? We put the question to the blind and visually impaired community in the US. How do they feel about Trump as their new president?
The man is very talented. There's no doubt. I mean, you can say all the bad things you want, and I've said some negative things, but I'm also one to point out positive things, and I think he has a lot more positive to bring.
At this rate, I have a great fear that we will be completely ignored and stripped of all of our hard-earned rights. He is a hardcore Republican, and they don't see us folks with disabilities of any kind as people. He's a bully.
My fear runs a lot deeper and a lot different than I think where most people are at with this, because my concern is for his safety, because I think Mr. Trump has managed to step himself into a ginormous hornet's nest, either prior to or shortly after his taking the presidency. There may be a catastrophic event bestowed upon us As far as things like he's going to attack the disabled or dismantle Social Security, those are just vicious rumors. He's never indicated any of that.
There's a lot of things being bandied about. People on the right say there's not a lot to worry about. People on the left say there is a lot to worry about. He's just, he's a wild card. And it's going to be a ride, that's for sure. And I think he might have some surprises up his sleeve. So we'll see.
Some of the first articles to come out after the election railed against Trump's apparent plans to repeal Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act as it's actually called, as soon as he was sworn in early next year. This was rebuffed pretty quickly, but he does have plans to reform elements of Obamacare. How would that affect blind Americans?
The thing is, the majority of people with disabilities aren't affected by the ACA because most people are still on Medicaid and Medicare. I think the biggest place where we're likely going to see problems is, you know, if there are any significant cuts to the Department of Ed, you know, which funds the rehabilitation program.
He's already said that he's going to amend Obamacare.
The Obamacare program under the Trump administration, one, would be modified, and I think it would be better off if it does get modified.
Now, honestly, Obamacare has not affected me because, you know, I'm on Medicare and Medicaid, so I have really been virtually untouched by it. But there are a lot of people that have been, and I do think there's too many people mad about it.
Apparently, Trump recently said there are certain things he intends to keep, like the rule about pre-existing conditions and the ability for young adults to still be on their insurance plans of their parents, up until the age of 26 at least.
It won't be long, probably about a year to year and a half, before the Obamacare gets fully replaced with something better.
So perhaps blind Americans won't be affected by ACA reform. But why then were the media headlines screaming about, "I'm a disabled American, Trump's policies will be a disaster for people like me"? Trump is the most ableist president in modern history, says one expert. Disability rights advocates are terrified of a Donald Trump White House. And two big disability rights organizations, the National Disability Leadership Alliance and ADAPT, felt the need to issue statements proclaiming their concern and the need to continue fighting.
I have some blind friends that are freaking out because they're so afraid we're going to lose our disability, which is, I've never heard him say anything about that. That's not even one of the things that he made a big issue about in his campaign.
I remember when George Bush Jr. was in office that, you know, he was attempting to cut all Social Security, so hopefully that's not the case.
Trump has already said in a number of his speeches that he will not cut Social Security or those type of benefits. What Trump wants to do is to go through and weed out the fraud that exists in Social Security. He will not touch benefits to the disabled. So I'm hoping that Trump will be better for the United States and the handicapped people in the United States.
I have heard repeatedly that center or very right people have concerns that he may not introduce entitlement reform because he hasn't talked about that. He has no plans to drastically change entitlement at this point.
Sheila Amorin is from the UK, but she lives in Michigan now and has lived in Boston and in California. She thinks that disability might actually be flying under the radar.
When people talk about empowering populations of people who, or, you know, groups of people who may be disadvantaged, the go-to situation here is very much race. So when we talk about equal opportunities, people with disability fall very much to the bottom of that pile because we're relatively small as a population.
My concern is more how people with disabilities are more likely to be treated, because so far it seems that minorities in general are facing a greater degree of overt discrimination. Trump incited something in people that was already there, but he basically gave it permission to run rampant because he went and did it on stage.
Honestly, I'm not as scared of him as I am some of his ridiculous, stupid supporters.
The things that scare me are just the racial and other things that have been going on since he came elected president. and just the way I've heard people treating each other, it seemed to make people seem kind of comfortable and like it's okay for us to treat people these ways that are not okay at all.
In Trump's brave new world then, the biggest fear for blind people in the US could be that Donald Trump's campaign has legitimized prejudice against all minorities.
So the VI minority reports there. Thanks to Laura Kirker for that. We do indeed live in interesting times, don't we? But thankfully, there's always room for something to soothe the soul. And if that's not music, then I don't know what is. This week's The Weekly Connect is staying stateside for the moment and heading down to Bowling Green, Ohio to meet Sherry and her band.
Boards on the window, mail by the door. Why would anybody leave so quickly for Ophelia? Where have you gone?
Hi, my name is Dr. Sherry Wells Jensen, and my day job is a professor of linguistics in the English department at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. And I am very lucky to play in a band. We are the Grand Royal ukulelists of the Black Swamp. I've been blind since birth, and I am so excited that I get to play in this band, which is what I love to do most, and I've got a good job that I really like. I have been musical for as long as I can remember, and I think it makes, because it's sort of my if I'm actually being musical overtly, sort of comes and goes, but I've learned that I'm much happier and I'm much easier to get along with. I can be in a ripping bad mood, just like ready to throw things at the wall and tear limbs off people. But it's always music that moves me from, I can't stand this and I'm really angry or really sad, to, okay, everything's going to be all right. And it's always been music that's moved me from one of those places to the other. When I think about the stereotype of the blind musician, I kind of want to go hide under my bed, because I feel like being musical is such an amazing gift and such a powerful thing. And it's better if it's a choice. Well, I mean, I started out on the piano because that's what everybody did when you were kids, right? And I didn't practice and I wasn't very good. But when I got the guitar, I learned that I could move it from place to place with me. And so I did some classical guitar and some folk music. And I started writing songs and did a little bit of the coffee house thing. It was great, but playing in a band with people is better, I think.
Princess Fair on a kitchen chair, tapping with your toes. I'd like to ask you where you go.
I'm standing here with the whole band.
I'm Jason. I'm the bass player.
And I'm Sherry, and I play this tenor uke.
And I'm Jeff, and I play a tenor uke with a resonator in it, so it sounds like this.
Hi, I'm Anne, and I play the baritone, which sounds like this.
Okay, so Anne and Jason and I have been playing together for like a scary long amount of time. We started out as church musicians together. And then I got a ukulele for Christmas one year. And I thought, the world has now changed. So then it was really clear to me that what I wanted to do most in my life then was play ukulele music. And then Anne and Jason and I, and so Jason had to do it because he's married to me. And Anne always wants to play more music all the time. And I said, you could sing harmony, because that's her genius thing, that she sings beautiful harmony. And so the three of us, we tried, we made a trio, and we're like, you know, we need another guy. And so Jeff was walking through a parking lot one time, and I tackled him and wrestled him to the ground. And I'm like, hi, Jeff, how are you? And he started talking to me all innocent, like he didn't think I had an agenda. And I said, you know what you need to do right immediately now is you need to acquire a ukulele, and you need to come play with us. So I knew it was really good. And so then I began this campaign of hounding.
I think a little bit of hounding. And then it was right around the time that the George Harrison biopic by Martin Scorsese came out. And George Harrison was a ukulele fanatic. Yay. And so I bought one and tried it. And I was amazed, because as a mandolin player, you go through your life and people say, oh, is that a ukulele? And you say, no, it's a mandolin.
And so it is. One of the big advantages that we have in being a ukulele quartet is that people have low expectations musically of us. and don't know what to expect. But an awful lot of what we do is listening to each other, which sighted musicians are supposed to do as well, but sometimes they manage to slack off on that a little bit in ways that we can't necessarily always do.
After one gig in some parking lot somewhere, there was a guy that said to us, "Man, your band has to be really good to play with you because that must really be hard." And I thought, oh no, really? I didn't know it was that hard. I do read Braille music, and I think it's the things I know about music have been really important to me. I am not a fluent reader of Braille music, but the Braille music that I do read has been super useful to me. For me, it's useful to learn things, so I learn them right. And it's also really useful sometimes when I can't remember how a song goes, in that there's always this moment, like 30 seconds before we start a song, where I think, oh, I have no idea what this song is like. And then it's really useful to have the Braille music there. So even if I can't hear it in my head, I can read it and I think, okay, I'm just going to play. And then when I start playing it, I think, oh yeah, that's how it goes. I'm fine now. My mom, when she heard that there was Braille music, she said that I had to learn it. And I'm like, this is stupid. You know how you are when you're a kid, right? You don't want to do things. And it's one of those things, looking back on it, that I think, yeah, that was a good choice. They made a good decision. Everything you play on a ukulele is beautiful. You just put your fingers down almost anywhere and it sounds pretty. Isn't it pretty? It's just always pretty. It's okay.
It works for sharing.
Braille music. Just a genius idea, really, if you think about it, isn't it? Well, if you want more information on how to learn Braille music or where to find sheet music, have you contacted RNIB? Well, there is a music advisory service, and also the RNIB Talking Books Library even has Braille music in amongst its collection. So give the RNIB helpline a call, 0303 123 9999. It's just a really useful number to have. Stick it somewhere, get a dictaphone out and record it in, 0303 123 9999. I'll give you that number later on in the programme.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, like most of the discussions on The Weekly Connect each week, we get a lot of comments, and one that really has sparked a lot of debate is the Space Invaders discussion we had. This was where we talked about unwanted contact. You know that way when someone just grabs you, you get grabbed and taken across a street, as happened to me just the other week. Taken across a street I had no intention of crossing, left there, and then expected to congratulate the sighted person who helped me. Well, just take me back across the road, please. Anyway, lots of people getting in touch about this, clearly resonating with you. Dr. Sarah Bryan got in touch after listening to this feature and told us her story.
My name's Sarah Bryan, and I'm currently living in Exeter, having recently moved from Sheffield. I was getting on a bus, and I had my hands full, like you often do. I had my dog in one hand and my purse in the other, because I think I've just shown my bus pass to the driver. I found a seat, and a woman said to me, "Can you move your dog? She's blocking the aisle." And I just said, "Yeah, give me a second. Just put my purse away, then I'll have my hands free to shift her." It was the sort of I can't do everything at once moment. And before I know it, my purse had been grabbed out of my hand. So I immediately just snatched it back very instinctively. And the woman protested, "Oh, we're going to help you. Oh, we're going to put it in your pocket for you. Oh, we're trying to help, you know." And I was so taken aback. All I could say was, but, you know. And, I put it away, moved the dog. And I was just seething. I knew I wasn't being mugged or anything like that, but I could not believe that someone would do that. You know, take your purse. You know, she didn't offer. She didn't say, "Do you want me to hold that for a minute while you move the dog?" She just grabbed it. And a couple of minutes later, the woman spoke to me again and said, "Oh, I'm ever so sorry. Taking your purse off you, what must you have thought?" And I just went, "Well, quite." And that was the end of the conversation. Yeah, but that's probably, I've had many, many instances of being grabbed, sometimes quite hard, I would add. Somebody left a bruise on me once. Not that that's difficult. I bruise very easily. But I found that having my purse taken off me was particularly memorable. I'm aware that when people do grab hold of you, sometimes, as Scott said the other week, it's because they think there's a genuine need or even an emergency. I've had occasions when I've been feeling to the edge of the curb with my white cane before I got a dog, and colleagues would just grab hold of me and go, no, stop, you can't go into the road. And it's like, I'm not going into the road, I'm just finding the curb. But it was interesting for me because I'm a massage therapist, and I worked for a little while at the Sheffield Royal Society for the Blind, giving massage to clients there. And there were a lot of elderly people who weren't quite so steady on their feet, who used a walking aid. Then it became quite difficult for me because I've got no useful vision, and some of them inevitably needed a bit of help getting on and off the couch. But it was very hard for me to know when to step in and when to leave alone. And because of my own experiences of being grabbed and manhandled, I tended to leave alone. And actually, my doing that on one occasion, a woman was saying, I can manage. And she landed up slap bang on the floor. So I then had a lady on the floor with no clothes on that couldn't get up. I think she was quite enjoying herself because she was quite keen for me to go and get a couple of men to come and haul her up back onto her feet again. But, in the meanwhile, it left me in a bit of a dilemma of, you know, if I had held on to her, she might not have gone down on the floor. But I don't want to be physically intrusive. So since then, I've actually gone and done some training. And if I think someone's a bit unsteady, I will just gently keep my hands on them, but try not to be grabby and too intrusive. But it is difficult because I now know what it's like to think, oh, golly gosh, this person's not safe. At what point do you trust that someone knows their own need, or that they're in a situation they're not aware of what's going on? So it is a really difficult one, and I can really see that from both sides now. It would be nice just to be spoken to in the first instance. You know, I've had instances of being grabbed by the arm, dragged across the road, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe the person can't speak. Then they deposit you on the other side and go, you're all right now, love. And when this chap did that, I wondered what he was doing. He made me jump because he grabbed me so hard. But yet people are very physical and they need to be more verbal.
Indeed. Thank you, Sarah Bryan, for getting in touch with us. That's what we're here for. We're your space to raise the issues that affect you. And when we hear from you, we know we're doing a good job. So thank you. And please do keep in contact telling us your experiences. You know, it really does help to educate the sighted world out there, and also help other blind and partially sighted people like you and I to, you know that there's someone out there, know there's someone who's experiencing the same thing. So please do get in touch. This is The Weekly Connect.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
The RNIB newsagent service, which delivers the latest news, magazines and stories in a range of accessible formats to people with sight loss, is now free for under 16s. Reading can make the world of difference, and it's vital that all blind and partially sighted children can access the same content as their sighted peers in a fun and creative way. Current titles in the RNIB newsagent service include BBC Horrible Histories, First News, Aquila, National Geographic and RNIB Blast Off. Formats include audio CD or USB, email or Braille. To register for RNIB newsagent, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
This is The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Hello, Stephen Scott here this week. As human beings, it is in our very essence that we have to reach out to each other. It's all about building communities, isn't it? Now, whether that's in real life or the virtual world, we all have that drive. So next up, let's meet the bloggers who build their communities online. On the line is Lucy Edwards, whose YouTube channel is called Yesterday's Wishes. It's been going for 2 years and has just under 30,000 subscribers. And Dipti Badesra, who keeps a blog called Disability and Me and has been doing this for a year. Thank you both for joining me.
No problem.
Lovely to have you both here because we are talking about blogging and vlogging and audio blogs and all that stuff. Lucy, I'll start with you. You blog about makeup. Well, you actually vlog about makeup. Maybe you should first of all tell us what the difference between a blog and a vlog is.
Yeah, I do both. It's very interesting. So I blog less than I vlog. I love vlogging. Basically, vlogging is just me getting the camera out, hopefully pointing at my face, but you know, the blind issue makes it so that sometimes, you know, my eyebrows get cut off and my boyfriend's like, Lucy, point at your face. Then the blogging I do probably about once, twice a month, really, and that's just on my Yesterday's Wishes blog in text. So yeah, it's really interesting. You don't often get a lot of people blogging and about makeup if they're blind, and I think that's why people are interested.
Yeah, I think it's one of those niche areas, isn't it? But I guess you get people who tune in who are blind, who are partially sighted, who are interested in it, but also you get people who are just maybe wondering, so how does someone who's blind do makeup? You know, because do you ever get the question, well, you know, you're blind, why do you care?
Yeah, I always get that, actually. There's so many funny questions on the bottom of my videos, but a lot of people actually try to prove me wrong. Like, on my video, Blind Girl Does Her Own Makeup, they're like, well, you're looking at the brush, you can obviously see it, and there's all these conspiracy theories in the comments, and I'm like, no, I really can't, I'm really sorry, it probably looks like I am, so it's probably like, psych. But yeah, it's very interesting, and I love the fact that I can bring everyone together, and I think that's what's so great about what I do and why I love it so much, because it is unity, and everyone can access the internet, and that's why I think so many partially sighted people come onto the internet and just feel liberated, because it is a place to become yourself, and you know, there isn't the barrier maybe of the physical aspect of seeing your guide dog first or seeing your cane first, and you know, there isn't the judgment there, I guess, so you don't have to be nervous, and I think that's what's so great about the internet. And I just love it, really.
Dipti, your blog is called Disability and Me, and it kind of echoes, I guess, what Lucy is trying to do with her blog, which is to educate people about disability, life with a disability, and all of the various aspects of it. For example, one of yours is Disability and the Worst Interview. Tell us about that.
So that was one of my latest blog posts, actually, and that was about an interview I had a few years ago after I graduated. It was really upsetting to me because it was like an internship, which would have been in another country, and the country is a developing country, so not necessarily the best infrastructure or anything like that. But I thought I could do it, and I went to this interview, and I thought it was like a chance for them to ask me about my skills and my experience, but it ended up just being a massive chat about how I wouldn't be able to do things because of my disability. I don't know whether they thought I was being really naive, but it wasn't the right forum to be discussing my disability, and I just felt really upset afterwards, and I'd never really talked to many people about it. And I was just thinking about a topic to write for my blog and thinking, actually, a lot of my posts are quite positive, whereas that doesn't mean I haven't had bad experiences. So I thought, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to write about it.
And what kind of reaction do you get, Dipti?
It varies a lot. So when I first started my blog, actually, it was a lot of my family and friends reading it. And a lot of them just didn't really think about how my disability affected me because they just don't. Like, it's not a factor in our discussions. Like, when I chat to them, it's not something I bring up quite often or anything like that. And it's just that I'm quite well adjusted, so people don't realize it's even an issue. So when they started reading them, they were like, you never talk about any of this. Like, you never talked about how, you know, how hard it is for you. One of my friends was like, you could have talked to me about this. And I was like, yeah, but it's not something I normally bring up. So for me, it's been a massive outlet, a way of just exploring my feelings, my experiences in a way that actually people can learn from it.
And it's often the case, isn't it, we hear about the charity begins at home. Sometimes awareness begins at home as well, I guess, Lucy.
Exactly. I think if you're gonna start anywhere with raising awareness, why not start with your family and friends? Because if you can convince them that, you know, there's a massive problem in terms of inclusion in society, then they're going to pass that message on. So for me, it's a very sort of homegrown way of sort of improving awareness in society about issues that face disabled people, you know, disabled people face all the time.
Lucy, you started losing your sight at 11, and you lost your sight completely about, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I was 17. It stems from a genetic condition, and I had a cataract first that came when about the time that I was doing my GCSEs and my last remaining eye. And then obviously due to the underlying problems when someone goes in at the front and tries to mess around an operation, you know, there is always that risk that my retina, my very poorly one, would detach completely, and that's what happened. It was very sad, but obviously there's so many emotions that go through your head when something happens like that. And now I'm completely blind 3 years on, just seeing a few shapes and light. And, you know, I can positively say that I'm starting to adjust to it properly. And I always, you know, echo that I truly believe if you're not happy with your disability and your true self, and you're always thinking about the past and what could have been, then you're never going to be truly happy in who you are. And I've really taken stock over the past couple of years and been like, well, you know, what about my disability can I like? And, you know, I truly feel so happy in my skin, especially over the past couple of months. And my blog just helps me to do that. The amount of love and support and community that Yesterday's Wishes creates keeps me going, and it's just so amazing.
What about you, Dipti? What's your experience of sight loss?
So I've got a genetic condition called rod monochromatism. It basically means that I don't have enough cones in my eyes, and the ones I do have don't work properly. So what that means is my sort of sight in daylight and in sunshine is really poor, so I tend to see like blocks of shapes rather than seeing like outlines of people. It generally means I need to look closer at things for things at work. So I've got like enlargement software on my computer at work and a large screen at work. But yeah, it generally just means that it takes me, I just look a lot closer at everything, and it takes me a lot more to focus on things. And I've got quite poor peripheral vision as well.
And the blog, I guess, for both of you, and, you know, I'm taking this from what you're saying, that it's almost like a session of therapy every time.
Yeah, definitely. It's almost a release. And then when you get such positive feedback back, it's like, okay, well, people do understand, and people are getting what I'm trying to say from it. You know, I've never really had any hate from it. And it's just a really positive atmosphere. Like, it's just so nice to hear people like, I met someone last week who'd read my blog. I hadn't met her yet. And she was like, you know, you're such a positive person. And she was quoting bits of my blog, and it made me so happy because I didn't actually realize it was having an impact on people as well.
Yeah. I totally find that too. That's amazing.
Mm. Do you want to pick up on that, Lucy? Do you want to?
Yeah. I mean, I always get people sighted and non-sighted. I love to educate, and I just think that it's so powerful, the internet. It's crazy when you step outside and you're like, oh, I posted that, and the reality of it is that you're in your bedroom or on your sofa, and you
exactly
got your hair in an updo with a face mask on your face, just posting this post, and you don't expect it to go to everywhere. And then when it's actually the reality, people read it. Insane.
Yeah.
Is it a hard line though? Because you've got two different things going on here. You've got your own attempt to be positive, and I'm quoting Dipti here actually, because one of your lines is, you know, that you never let people's perceptions of your ability keep you down. Mm. But at the same token, you do have issues. You do have problems. Mm. Is it hard to present yourself to the world, you know, in a way that people can empathize with, in a way that, you know, you understand that, yes, you do have problems, but equally, you know, you do have a good life? Do you think people only see one or the other?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think, with anything, like, if you've got struggles, if you've got things that you need to deal with, you're not always going to be 100% positive. It's impossible for one person to always be positive about something. So, yeah. In a way, like, you know, giving advice to people is to help them get through whatever they're struggling with. And that's kind of the point, one of the many points of my blog is giving people advice, because I know what, when I've had issues and when I've had problems, I've had to work through them myself. You know, I've not always had, like, I've got a lovely husband, but I've not always had people I can talk to about everything. And that is like, you know, that is another reason why I do the blog, because then people know that they've got someone to support them if they're going through a hard time.
Yeah, I'm totally with the same vein with my blog. It's just maybe going from the other sort of mindset that, you know, we, both of us, to some extent, are educating the people that don't know anything about disability.
Exactly.
And don't have, and don't have a person in their life that's disabled and they've never met a disabled person. And I think it is very hard to break down those barriers, especially I'm at university at the moment, and I'm not going to lie, I get every day, now I've got a regular taxi driver, but I've had about 4 access refusals in the past 3 weeks, and some people talk to my note taker rather than me, and it's very hard to go into a new situation where you are battling this stereotype that they just see your dog.
Exactly.
and not the person behind. And I think if they do read our blogs and do see us as people, it does break that down, and I think that's what's so special about our blogs. But also that, you know, when you're faced with it in the real world as well, that people just, if they see that you're okay and on the face of it you look okay, everything's fine, then they just take it as read that you're okay. And sometimes I think people don't think necessarily deeply, and I think that is hard to overcome sometimes, definitely.
Well, it's certainly a source of comfort for many people out there who are blind or partially sighted like us, who, you know, just sometimes need to know that others out there are feeling the same way, that they experience the same things, and that's what your blogs do. Lucy, tell us where we can find your blog, Yesterday's Wishes.
Yeah, so I'm all over the internet, but mostly on YouTube. It's youtube.com/yesterdayswishes. Love to see you there.
And Dipti, Disability and Me?
Yep, it's just disabilityandme.net. It's a WordPress site, but I've got the link sorted. So, yeah, just put in disabilityandme.net and you'll find it.
Dipti Bidressa and Lucy Edwards, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both of our guests for joining us. And don't forget to check out their sites. If you follow us on Twitter at RNIB Radio, then we will put the links up there to both of those blogs. Now, if you have a blog or you follow someone who does, what do you get out of it? Arnie the Guide Dog got in touch via Twitter. Yes, Arnie the Guide Dog told us about his owner's blog, reflecting on life and issues they face. Cody uses his to share the things he's good at and his challenges. Now, one thing we'd love to hear from you about is your nominations for Society of the Week. We do this every week. Padma got in touch about the Milton Keynes Reader Service, and we're looking forward to following that one up in the coming weeks. You can email us anytime at theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. That's theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Or you can tweet us at RNIB Radio using #TheWeeklyConnect. Whew, that's a lot, isn't it? Now, let's go to Devon, shall we? Oh, that would be nice. Yes, the glorious county of Devon now is where we're off to meet Moor Vision and hear how they have helped some of the younger members of our community.
When Charlie was diagnosed, we were at a bit of a loss, trying to deal with the situation and come to terms that our daughter was blind and that she would lead a life without sight. It was a very frightening time, but one day the phone rang and this lady called Laura Hughes introduced herself. She said she'd had a daughter who was also visually impaired and she wanted to start a group, sort of like a support group, so families could meet and chat with other children who were visually impaired. No need for explanations. The visually impaired children and their siblings can just be themselves and have the knowledge that they are not alone.
My name's Laura Hughes, and Moor Vision is a charity in Devon which supports families of both blind and partially sighted children, and also families who have a blind or partially sighted parents. I started the charity 10 years ago, And the reason I started was quite simple. I was mum to a little girl who was 7 at the time, who was herself partially sighted. And one day on the way back from the eye hospital, she said to me, "Mummy, I've never met another little girl with poorly eyes before." And I thought to myself, no, you haven't. And you're probably not going to meet one either, because especially in the really rural parts of Devon, you just don't meet enough people. And my daughter was the only child with partial sight at her school. Anyway, I said to her, right, I said, I'll do something about that. And by Christmas of that year, I had a charity set up and ready to go.
My daughter, she's blind all her life. We're all weird. People who can see are weird to her. She's completely blind. She doesn't know any different. But living in the world now, she's getting older, she knows she's different. But being part of More Vision just makes her feel less different, if you see what I mean.
I like More Vision because it's a big sort of network of people who understand, and there's no like explaining of, oh, I've got this condition, and I can like just have normal conversations, because in a normal environment people will sort of in a way just approach me differently to the way that the friends in More Vision just don't, because, you know, it's normal. It's not, oh, that's Charlie, she's blind. It's, oh, that's just Charlie.
The charity provides a lot of different services. We have regular monthly activities. We do one or two residentials a year, which are a really vital importance, because they give the children so much confidence to try out things they might not have otherwise tried out. And they're hugely popular with the families. We also offer parents' evenings where we give parents information about all the things they need to know to really enhance and enrich their visually impaired child's life. We try very hard to support people with educational advocacy, because it's an area which is a real struggle for some parents, is getting the right education for their child. We have lots of Christmas events just about to come up in the next couple of months, and we have our very popular annual Christmas pantomime. So we've got a very busy and exciting time coming up. Really, my dream is just to continue to run the charity, to continue to expand the charity. And it's just the most wonderful experience, just to stand back at an activity and just watch those children who I really hope will thrive and flourish in the way that my own child has done.
If we didn't have More Vision there, to be honest, I really don't know where I would be, and my mum as well, because it has been a complete lifeline, because those friends, they understand. If I was to imagine life without them, I really think we would be on a very different everyday quality of life.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, really. Without it, I don't know where we'd be, quite honest.
Well, thank you to those at More Vision for telling us all about their society. And if you would like to nominate your society of the week, then please do get in touch. Email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect Magazine, our monthly membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from a dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, still to come on The Weekly Connect this week, we're going to hear from a guide dog owner who went alone with guide dog training. Yes, didn't get involved with Guide Dogs the charity, or indeed any guide dog charity. No, she just got a dog and trained the dog herself. We'll find out how that works out in a rather hilarious tale coming up on this week's Pause for Thought on The Weekly Connect. Now, over the Irish Sea, in 2011, Claire was just starting her college course in geography, her passion and a subject that she wanted to teach as a career. But life had other plans for her. Let's hear Claire's story.
At the start of 2011, like, I was perfectly, had perfect eyesight. I was studying in Maynooth University in Ireland. I was driving a car. I was 100% independent. I think about February or March, I started getting a couple of migraines. I went down to my local GP and she just assumed it was just, you know, a tension headache. But she did mention that, oh, 5% of a brain tumour, but we won't get into that. I remember I used to work part-time in a shop, Maxall, in Dundrum, in Dublin. I just noticed that the lights were kind of going dim and my eyesight wasn't as great. And I just went next door to the pharmacy next. But the girl that worked there goes, Claire, run over to Specsavers. I could read ABCDs, no problem, the letters, no problem. It was just then when the optician asked me to click a button when I seen a white light. I just could not see the white light. The optician got very worried and asked if I could ring someone to bring me to Vincent's. My dad brought me in, now he left, and then I went and got a CT scan. Then the doctor came and told me she just for me to call my dad to get him back, you know. They brought us into the room where everyone gets the bad news, and the doctor just said, unfortunately, we've seen quite a bit of tissue in your brain. The surgery was absolutely successful. It was benign, the tumour. Yeah, I thought my eyesight was going to get better. Went home a few days later and I just noticed that my eyesight was getting worse every day. Now, the nurses said it's just because you're very, very swollen, Claire. Your eyesight should come back to absolutely, like, normal. But 2 weeks later after I got home, 3 weeks after the surgery, and I just noticed, geez, my eyesight is nearly actually gone now. It was just decreasing day by day, just bit by bit. And I remember ringing my nurse in Beaumont, and she goes, Claire, get back in here. The doctor, the surgeon and the radiologist, they just don't know what happened. It took me a while to understand that I not only needed to understand how to be blind, I needed to understand that people needed time to understand it too. None of my family, none of my friends have really come across a blind person before. So it'd be little things like if I was sitting beside my dad, people might say, oh, Eugene, would Claire like a cup of tea? And I'm right there in front of them. I felt like I was a new person to everyone else, but yeah, I was still, do you know me? After I'd say the first few months, the first year, I suppose kept on getting better at being blind, you know, I learned more. The only thing I didn't love at the start was bringing my white stick out on a night out when I went out with my friends, because I'd be all dolled up in my dress and my heels, and no way was I bringing out a white stick. But as the year or so went on, I was way more confident. I wasn't embarrassed one bit about saying I was blind, being blind, or showing me stick. So NCBI, my auntie seen this one day and that there was an open day. Now, I've never before this day seen a blind person. Never met a blind person, never knew what blind people do. I just hadn't got a clue. I walked into NCBI. There was boys, girls, men, women, every sorts, walking around with sticks, just walking around vision impaired. Everyone was just one. And everyone was just themselves. Nikki was Nikki. Nikki wasn't blind, she was Nikki. Barry was Barry, he wasn't eyesighted, he was just Barry. It was just amazing, I didn't feel like I was the blindy in the corner kind of thing. So I started there, I learned a lot more about technologies for blind people. I learned Braille. I did cooking, crafts, pottery, French, you name it, loads of stuff. My confidence just completely grew as a blind person. I was no longer by any means embarrassed. I wasn't embarrassed about asking anyone to bring me to the bathroom. I didn't care if I had to interrupt a conversation. I just loved actually being who I was. Look at me, I've done skiing, I've done skydiving. I'm doing geography, a very, very, very visual subject. You know, I can do a lot more things than I probably would have taught myself when I first lost my eyesight. People keep on telling blind people or people in wheelchairs or any person with disability, oh, geez, no, you can't do that. No, 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 you cannot do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, no, no. And you just really start to learn that, yes, I can.
Incredible bravery and strength of character from a remarkable woman. She's clearly someone who's not going to let anything stand in her way, and I think we should all applaud her for that. Thank you for talking to us, Claire. Now, someone else who didn't let things get in her way is Lynn. After her guide dog sadly died, Lynn was presented with a difficult future, and it looked like a replacement dog would take a little time. Her solution was unusual, and not one she'd recommend for everyone.
My name's Lynn Holdsworth. I live in Bangor, Northern Ireland. And I've got with me Lucy, my six-year-old Labrador, who's an owner-trained guide dog. I had quite a few dogs from Guide Dogs UK. I think I had five dogs. My last one sadly died very suddenly when she was six, and I urgently needed another dog. So I was living and working in London. I was going to college. I had a really busy social life, and I really could not do without a dog. So I spoke to Guide Dogs the day after she died, and they told me that it was likely to be at least a year before they could give me another dog. I was gutted about that, and then about 6 weeks later, I was walking along the platform on Liverpool Street, and I almost fell under a tube train. So I kind of decided at that point, I really need a dog, even if it's a terrible dog. I just need a dog to keep me away from the edge of these trains. I'm really frightened here. So I started looking around the rescue centres. If something's too good to be true, it usually is. So I found this Labrador in a little rescue centre in northwest London. And I decided to take her home and train her. She really was a problem dog. The first day I took her to work, she ate through the boss's telephone and network cable. A few days later, she actually peed in her own ear at a meeting. And I don't know how a dog can do that, but she did it. So this was the nightmare dog from hell. It really was. But do you know, at that point, I was splitting up with my husband. I was going to be homeless because I couldn't afford to keep the house on by myself. I think I was losing my job. Everything seemed to be going wrong, and I was determined this project was going to work for me. So I stuck all the bad stuff. I'm very arrogant. Look, I thought to myself, I've had five guide dogs before. I can do this. I can train the badness out of this dog. So the first few days were just really familiarising her with the lead, taking her on the tube, and just trotting around, letting her get to know the area. Then on about day five, I decided to put a harness on her, and I thought this is going to be such a disaster. So I had a harness that I bought from the internet, and I took her from my street, which I knew really well. So when I knew we were coming up to a lamppost, I purposely let her slam me into it, and I let out a big scream, ow, and jumped right back. And you know, ever since then, she's been really cautious. Actually, the guiding wasn't the hard bit at all. Apart from steps, for some reason, she would put her paws on a bottom step, but she would not stop for the top step. She used to barrel down the steps. That went on for about 6 months. So that one was quite difficult. After I felt like Lucy had reached a reasonable standard, I contacted Guide Dogs because I was under the impression that all I had to do was train her up and they would certify her, because that's what used to happen. But I think they got quite upset. So they've refused to certify her, and they've refused to give me the public access standards that they work to. There's pros and cons to having an owner-trained guide dog. So some of the cons would be that it does cost a fortune. I cannot take her on a plane because there's a bit of a grey area legally around where non-certified service dogs can travel. So I can take her everywhere else legally, so she comes to public places with me. Everything's good in that respect. The pros, just the pride, the buzz of walking down the street with a dog that you've trained. And she just does it beautifully, and I am so proud of where we've come from and where we've got to. She's a brilliant little dog. I probably wouldn't have gone down this road if there hadn't been such a waiting list. I've had five good to excellent dogs from Guide Dogs UK. And I totally support the work that they're doing. But I really couldn't do without a dog. I don't feel I had a choice here. I would really recommend that For people who haven't had a guide dog from a school, I probably wouldn't do it. You really need to know what to expect from a dog before you own a train. But I think if you know what to expect, you've got the confidence, the time, the money, and a lot of patience, there's no reason why you can't do it. Caveat here, I definitely picked the wrong dog and I would not make that mistake again. Not that I think she's the wrong dog now, she's just perfect. But with Lucy, I would say it took me about 2.5 years, which is a very long time. You should see her now. She's gentle, she's lovely, she's a good little guide dog. She's really everything I want a guide dog to be.
Well, thank you to Lynn Holdsworth and her user-trained guide dog. Yeah, trained all by herself. That is Lucy, the guide dog, of course. Thank you to both of you. I think a dog toileting in its own ear is probably the funniest thing I've heard in a very long time. Thank you for sharing your story, Lynn. That is it for the Weekly Connect this week. Thank you, as always, for getting in touch and telling us your stories. If you have a view on anything, though, you've heard on this programme, get in touch. You can do that on email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Remember, it is your show. Your stories make it on the air, and we will talk about anything if it's to do with sight loss. Yes, this is the programme that will discuss it, the good, the bad, and the ugly of sight loss. You can also get in touch on Twitter as well if you want to do that, @RNIB Radio, or you can use the hashtag there while you're there on Twitter, The Weekly Connect, using that hashtag. Next week, interestingly, Lynn's comments about waiting times for getting a guide dog, which made her decide to train her own dog, is one of the topics we'll be discussing next week. And also the future of guide dogs itself, because the organisation is going through immense change. But what is next for the 85-year-old institution? We're going to be talking about that on the next Weekly Connect. And oh, one more thing. Yes, I did promise to tell you about the RNIB helpline number. Did you get your dictaphone ready? Well, here it is. 0303 123 9999. Yes, that is the number. I did promise to tell you once again, didn't I? It is that number to get in touch with, which lets you access so many of RNIB services. Do give it a call and they'll put you right. 0303 123 9999. Don't forget, our podcast is on iTunes as well as on Audioboom. It's also continuing every week on RNIB Connect Radio at this time. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.